It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. E right, didn't have no name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Bit of a delay. I was trying to do the calculations in my head. Has The Rock been in more Fast and Furious movies or Jumanji movies? I bring that up because I went to go see Spider-Man Brand New Day. We'll talk more about that when Michael gets here. Michael Carroll's days today, 11:30. Michael Carroll will join us, those Comic-Cast, to talk movies and television. And the big movie, the big IP of the week is Spider-Man, making lots and lots of money, setting records. So if people thought Marvel was dead, you could think that, but Spider-Man, clearly a viable franchise. So we'll get to that a little bit later. But one of the trailers of the mini that I sat through before the movie began was a Jumanji trailer. I did not know they were making another Jumanji. I could have done without seeing another trailer for Jumanji. Turns out The Rock has, well, maybe Sean knows. He is an expert. Sean, by the way, Lance, you left your used straw in here. That right there that I flicked aside so it was away from my workspace. Don't lie. No. Oh, so he just said it was someone else's, then said he co-opted it, which makes it takes it to another level. I'm just going to believe that's a lie and it's actually your straw. But besides that, another Jumanji movie, but Sean is the Fast and Furious guy, so you would know best. I've already gone through IMDb, asked AI overview, so now I have my answers because I couldn't do it in my head. Mm-hmm. How many Fast and Furious movies or spinoffs has The Rock been in?
So Fast 5, 6, 7, 8, Hobbs and Shaw, so 5?
I have it at Fast X, an uncredited cameo.
Oh yeah, Fast. I forgot. He's in a Marvel-ish post-credit scene.
Yes. So we
picked up a phone.
So we got him at six. Wow. Fast movies, and it'll be his fourth Jumanji movie with Jumanji Open World coming up later this year.
Yeah.
But he also has Fast Forever, which will be his seventh.
Oh, fast gotta franchise, protect the lead.
Fast franchise movie. So he still has a lead when it comes to the Fast franchise. We'll see how many Jumanjis they can they can make. Does it all depend on whether Karen Gillian wants to get into that costume again? Like how many times does she want to get in the shape she needs to get into that costume? And maybe they'll have to stop making them if she says, "Nah, I'm good." Because you can put Kevin Hart in that stupid outfit, safari outfit, over and over again. It won't matter. He'll do it.
Jack Black, we know he'll do it.
Jack Black will do it. We know they'll do it. I think the real question is, does Gillian want to continue to get put in that outfit as she continues to do other things in her career? So, yeah, if you go see Brand New Day this weekend, you're likely going to see that Jumanji trailer and ask yourself the question, why? Because that's the question I was asking as I was just hoping to finally get to the Spider-Man movie. AMC does a great job of making you think the movie's about to start, and they go, hold on, wait a minute. We've got another way to tell you to silence your phones or talk to you about some of the advantages of being a member of AMC's, man, whatever they call their membership. So it was a lot of...
Nicole Kidman has to get involved.
Yeah. She was prominently there as we finally got to the movie, but it was like a several...
several. Okay, there's more of this. So once again, we'll talk to Michael more about the movie, which is getting reviewed well. And I'm at the point now where, because I watched it and my algorithm has people tweeting about it coming into just, I get it in my on my For You page, I am muting anyone who is overly negative, because after watching it, I don't see how you can be. But that's just one man's opinion. We'll get the expert's opinion a little bit later. As far as what's happening tonight, since Spider-Man Brand New Day is out of the way, I can fully focus on, we'll call it, because why not, hyperbole or not, the biggest series of the season. Astros, Rangers. The Rangers lose yesterday, so the Astros are only a half a game behind the Rangers. They'll have, reputationally, their best pitcher on the mound in Hunter Brown. We know Peter Lambert has been their best pitcher, but Hunter Brown, certainly the highest ceiling of all their pitchers, so he'll go to start the series. I believe the Rangers pushed back Eovaldi. I think I saw that, where Eovaldi might have been scheduled to pitch in the Rays series, and they moved some things around to have him ready for this series. So Eovaldi against Brown tonight, as the Astros can be in first place by the end of tonight's proceedings, which is, I won't even say remarkable, because that would mean like I haven't seen it coming for the last month and a half or so as they continue to gain ground. But if you think back to who they were as a team and what they look like in May and June, it's like, are we ever going to get to a point where this season actually has some consequence? And it does, thanks to how they've played and thanks to how the AL West has played so far. So it'll be fun. And I've asked the question a couple of times. I am interested to see how the fans respond. Do they show up to the ballpark? It's a weekend series in the summer with the Rangers in town. Do the Astros get better crowds than they've gotten? Because I think the last time they're at home, Chandler Rome was tweeting rather facetiously about how the crowd was responding to Yordan's exploits, because Yordan had a good couple nights, as he always does, but he did it in the home ballpark, and there weren't a lot of people there to celebrate what he was doing. I think the Marlins series in particular was what Chandler Rome was tweeting about. So hopefully the people show up, the team's giving you a reason to, and they've made it known that they're not selling, so the guys you like to watch are going to be here for the rest of the way, and the hope is they'll be able to add someone to bolster the roster as they try to make a push. And by the time we get back, it'll be trade deadline day, right? That'll be August 3rd.
Yeah.
So we'll see if they've made a move by then, or will we be on the air when they make a move? That tends to happen because of the placement of the show. Moves get made, whether it be locally or nationally, and we just happen to be on the air when they happen. So we'll see if the Astros do that. I believe the David Montgomery trade, I remember that. That was a trade that happened while we were
LeBron.
On the air. Yeah. More national than local, but yes, that's the most recent big news. I wonder where we will be when Zach LaVine gets bought out. will you be able to break in and tell me the Kings and Zach LaVine have come to a resolution and he's been bought out and he's free to go wherever he wants? Yes, hit the horn. Save that for Klay Thompson's buyout. At least that's Texas related. If you don't know, Klay Thompson's a Dallas Maverick. I can understand if you have stopped following Klay Thompson's career. There hasn't been a lot to it over the last couple of years as he's been sequestered in Dallas, where a franchise is simply hoping that Cooper Flagg is who they think he is, but that might take a couple of years before they're of any real importance in the NBA. So Klay Thompson's looking, it appears, for a buyout. So Sean will let me know if that comes down, and then I will let you know. We'll go to break.
I'm not really going to track it that hard.
No. I am waiting for you to do it for something so minuscule, and then we'll talk about it. I wonder what you'll choose, because some things are at least big enough where, Sean's maybe serious about it. I'm waiting for the one where you hit it and it's clearly you're not serious about it.
Bruce Thornton has
signed his deal with the Rockets after being drafted. All right, so we'll go to break. We'll talk some Texans when we come back. They had an indoor practice. They're in the facility in the bubble today, so didn't do a lot. And there's some sound from yesterday that we'll get to. D'Amico Ryan spoke, among others, but we'll hear from D'Amico when we come back on the wide receiver room. It's one of the conversations we've had about where they're going to find production other than Nico Collins. Tank Dell isn't practicing as they try to ramp him up. They were saying it all morning, and now they got me. Jalen Noel didn't practice. He doesn't have a big issue, but he's on the pup, so we have to wait to see him back in action as he gets prepared for his second year. But we'll hear from D'Amico on his wide receivers. We'll also hear from Kirk Cicinetti because he's got pretty much a 100% approval rating unless you're in the SEC because he said some things as the Big Ten SEC war of words continues. And nationally, people are pushing back on the narrative coming out of the SEC about how tough it is. Nine-game schedule, very tough. Nine-game conference schedule, very tough. No one wants to really hear it, and Kirk Cicinetti certainly didn't want to hear it, so we'll hear from him today on the show. If you want to join us, the number is 713-780-3776. And while we ended the show talking about Baker Mayfield feeling disrespected, it is unique for a franchise to treat a player of, or not a player, but a quarterback like the Bucs are treating Baker in some ways. And it certainly is unique that the quarterback has been so open about how he feels. So we'll talk about that in relation to the Texans because we played some Adam Schefter sound yesterday, and now Ian Rappaport said yesterday as well that the Texans would like to get a contract done for C.J. Stroud, an extension, because they back him fully. So we'll get into that as well. We're just getting started. The number 713-780-3776. We will be back.
10 to noon.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Alalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Alalea.
So while I did watch Spider-Man Brand New Day, when I got home, took a nap, and then I was like, you know what? What's on Prime? I don't remember if Michael talked about this shark movie. He mentioned a shark movie. This one featured Ant-Man's daughter, Catherine Newton. And let's just say it's like all the other shark movies, except there's an annoying character that you hoped. Actually, of the five people in peril, there's only two people you hope don't die. Like, Catherine Newton's character is set up for you not to want her to die. You may want her to die. I didn't want her to die. Her best friend, I definitely wanted her to die. You know what? I got my wish. The shark did its job thoroughly, except it didn't get the final girl. Like, the final girl character in horror movies, they just do it with sharks now. And I can't recommend it unless you go in rooting for people to get eaten by sharks, which maybe you do. You'll get your wish. Also, I don't remember his character, but the security guard, the ineffective security guard from White Lotus, the most recent season, he's in it. He plays the swim tour guide.
He's really getting typecast.
I can't remember what his character's name was in White Lotus, but
I know the security guard.
Yeah, it's just a security guard who had a crush on the K-pop star who got a role in a TV show. Her name is Lisa. As far as her on stage name in that Blackpink, that K-pop group, she was the girl he wanted. He was a security guard who wasn't about that life until at the very end. He's in that movie. It's not a great movie. Let's just say that.
What the doubleheader though? What a doubleheader.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna watch the star of Stranger Things in a role that we all knew what role she played, but we pretended like we didn't. I watch her along with Tom Holland. They do a great job. And then I go watch Ant-Man's daughter. She was fine. She was fine. So that's how I put it together in my head. Marvel and Marvel. What if Ant-Man's daughter was getting chased by sharks? How would it go? although I knew how it would go because all the movies go the same way. But this one was in a cave. I think it's called Devil's Mouth or something because that was the name of one of the cave structures in the movie.
Yeah.
On Prime right now, I can't recommend watching it, but it is a way to pass the time. The Devil's Mouth right now. And going by Rotten Tomatoes, right along with my review as well.
Oh, this just came out.
Yeah, it premiered yesterday.
New release. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Head-to-head with Spider-Man.
That's strong.
I mean, it released the same day that
Spider-Man I guess you can say it's head-to-head with Spider-Man. Let's just say. If you're lining them up and say who has all the advantages.
Tail the tape.
Yeah, Spider-Man gets all the check marks in its column. But that's out there. Maybe Michael says don't watch it. I wish you would have recommended it to me first. But I got through it. As far as the Texans, as I mentioned, because I said we would get to some sound before we went to break, D'Amico Ryans. I think I don't know if you want to use the word railed against the talent on the offensive side of the ball, but let's just say I'm not impressed. They've got one plus player, and they have a bunch of question marks, at least in my eyes, on how that thing's going to operate. They'll have to be a collection of their parts that comes together as opposed to the individuals, because you don't see stars on that side of the ball. One of the rooms who needs to prove its worth because of injuries and just young guys who are unproven is that wide receiver room. Here's D'Amico Ryans on what he thinks of the room through a couple of days of camp.
Wide receiver room, they continue to impress every day. Someone different making a play. You know, every day. So it's an exciting room, I think, for us to see how they develop throughout camp. But I'm excited to see, you know, not only them perform in camp, but also just to see them get into some live preseason games. Right, we put a lot on our wide receivers when it comes to coming out of the huddle, aligning, motion. We put a lot on their plate. So your mental game has to be on point to play wide receiver, and then you have to be physical and grimy enough to block in a running game to make our team. So we have a lot of guys who have that mindset, so it's just it all sort itself out.
It's likely just the way he talks about things, so this isn't a criticism of the room or what D'Amico said, but I like a clear number two. Whoever that is, if it's Higgins and that plays out, cool. But I'd love to hear Higgins makes a play every day, or whoever it is. It could be, I guess, Hutchinson. He's one of the only healthy ones that you would think has a real shot to contribute. But we know about Nico. So as long as he's on the field, he's going to produce. They need one other guy that you can line him up every Sunday and know we're going to get numbers out of him as long as the quarterback can deliver the football. So I hope that guy develops, whoever it is, over the course of the next month or so. That straightforward, it's Nico. And this guy, every down, we know we can go to one of these guys and we're going to get something out of him. At this point, it's probably Dalton Schultz. Like, as far as dependable pass catchers, even if I joke about him being free access, that's a guy who CJ's going to lean on. You can likely expect 70 to 80 catches from Dalton Schultz. Whether they're at 9.8 yards a reception, that's a different conversation. But I know what I'm going to... It's not a compliment to say this, at least when it comes to Dalton Schultz, but I know what I'm going to get out of Dalton Schultz.
Known commodity
Dalton Schultz. Maybe that's a better nickname than free access. But but
it is a slightly more positive.
Yeah. But we know when he's on the field, you can think he's going to get his five catches for 45 to 50 yards, and maybe he gets a big one. Who knows? That's a guy I know is going to be there. I need one more. Along with Nico, and then I think you have a real pass-catching trio that can get you somewhere along with whatever the running game is going to provide. So beyond my focus on the offensive line, I'd love to get a real number two. The most likely candidate right now is Higgins, draft status, what he did last year. I did not know he had six touchdowns last year. I looked at it as I was comparing his stats to Xavier Hutchinson, and Higgins in his rookie year did wind up catching six touchdown passes, so that's not a bad start to his career. And, you know, yards per catch, right around 13, so most likely guys, so you'd have two big guys on the outside, then you have to just find your slot, whether that be Tank, who isn't practicing right now, or Noel, who also isn't practicing right now. So this morning we were talking about this, and Lance was a little concerned because Tank hadn't been practiced, hasn't practiced yet. He's out there. The Texans don't have him on the PUP list, so he can be involved in some things, but he's not actually participating in any 11-on-11 or 7-on-7. No team stuff for Tank Dell right now. While we have certainly talked about what he's done to get himself in a spot where he can be a contributor, I kind of look at Tank as found money. If he's out there and he's playing and he can contribute, you know what? Cool. Because after what he's been through, I don't expect him to be what he was in 23 and parts of 24. I can hope. But that leg injury was so devastating and the recovery took the amount of time that it did. I will take anything I get from Tank and think of it as, you know what? I applaud him for being back. And if you are a 40 catch guy and you catch a couple touchdowns, I ain't gonna hold it against you. I don't look to him to be that number two option I'm talking about as far as a wide receiver core. That has to come from likely Higgins, if I'm just comparing talent level to Hutchinson and others.
I mean, if you could, like, whatever, wave a magic wand and you're like, there will be no injury slowdown for Tank Dell, then it's like, well, Tank Dell's the number two, you know? Like,
yeah,
that's just how good
he was.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not really worrying about the not participating. Like, let me see week two of training
if
camp.
If it stretches into.
Yeah. But the first couple days, like, I'm not sweating it too much. But, yeah, if you could get any assurances, like, whatsoever about Tank Dell and his health. Like, I actually, then it kind of almost teeter-totters back into, like, okay, now this receiver room feels pretty good. But, without him or without being able to depend on him, it gets to some seventh round, sixth round rookies pretty fast.
Yeah, Bond is one of the guys. Yeah. Well, Steve Smith Jr. likes Bond, so maybe the big time receiver from years ago knows a little something about wide receivers, and maybe Lewis Bond can be a guy that contributes. But to your point, if we're talking about Lewis Bond contributing, we're a bit down the totem pole, unless he's a giant surprise, the rookie out of the sixth round pick out of Boston College. I was talking to someone who was out at practice, who's been out of practice the last couple of days, and he said that I asked him because we had that conversation about Rutledge, and you gave me what DJ Bienemae said, and he thought the same, that as long as he can get it down, that's his job to win. I think he had a bad snap in a practice recently. And we saw how that played out against the Steelers. But as long as that gets cleaned up and he can operate, the expectation is he's going to win the job. He did. The same guy I talked to did point out that all the talk about D'Amico and their operation and the execution.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You would hope that's not a four-year issue for the Texans. We shouldn't be in year four having that conversation.
They changed OCs, though.
Yeah, but...
Now it's only year two of this operation.
Ah.
The other operation.
So the clock has started over.
Yes. Okay, yes. Now, because everyone knows when you're in the NFL, when you lose an offensive coordinator, you immediately forget how to operate. Yeah. And then and have to build back from
his
zero.
His thought was, we're too deep into the tenure of this team, this era, to be having conversations about executing before the snap.
Every year.
Getting to the line.
Jalen
Hurts at the right time.
Every year of his life, Jalen Hurts has had to learn how to operate again.
He's had a different OC for
basically every year.
Yeah,
there might have been a Alabama double up or something
at some point. Yeah,
yeah, but every other Baker Mayfield changes OC every year, starts from ground zero.
It does sound, as he put it, he might even have been more insulting. I'm going to say he said high school, but he might have said like 7th or 8th grade. He said that this is very 7th and 8th grade stuff, talking about this. And it shouldn't be a conversation this deep into D'Amico Ryans' tenure that they're still trying to figure out how to get to the line in the right way and their motions and all the stuff. People are executing better. Okay, you're a pro football team. Then why are we talking about this still? But as long as they get it right, Sean, you make a good point if you are – someone who decides to cape for the Texans. It's year two of Nick Haley. It's not year four. Hey, guys, it's different now.
You need more than 17 games. You need 19 games. And then you start to learn how to go up to the line correctly, not draw infraction, whatever, penalties.
No, you have to get set for a second if two people are going in motion.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I hope 17 games plus an off season and a summer, and now training camp, they figured it all out. Enough so D'Amico doesn't mention that they're getting better at that anymore.
Because it's out of mind. Like they get better.
Yeah, because then we see in the season that they're not better. They did fix getting fooled by simple twists and stunts on the O-line. They did fix that.
Yes.
In year one. They fixed that in year one of Nick Haley.
Yes.
And Cole Popovich.
Yes. Yes.
But
boom.
But the operation of getting to the line of scrimmage has taken some extra time.
Gotta use that time elsewhere.
The next time they're in a playoff game and they roll a defensive tackle out there, was it Togiai? Was that the playoff game where he didn't get set?
Yes, I think so.
Let's hope the next time they try that play, now that Togiai has had 17 games of being a defensive tackle who's incorporated into the offensive game plan, he's set. And we get that playoff and score. There it is.
Now, get ready, NFL.
Yeah. I'm glad we're getting there. When we come back, we'll talk about a man who didn't take very long to get his operation in order, Kirk Cicnetti. He said some things, particularly one thing, that upset some people in SEC country. Doesn't hurt that, or at least doesn't hurt that particular feeling that they're having that he won and punished Alabama in a bowl game. We'll get to Kirk Cicnetti at Big Ten Media Days. He sounds just like you would expect. If you know anything about him, it's exactly what you would think Cicnetti would say as he took a thinly veiled shot at the SEC. We'll get to that when we come back.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
It's just about who we are as people that we get tired of someone winning if they're not winning for our team. So Cicnetti, great story at Indiana, went to the playoff in his first year. Won the title in the second year. What's the runway for Cicnetti right now? Because I bring it up because the sound you're going to hear was captioned by SEC Unfiltered, and you might imagine that they didn't think what he said was all that great. I think they said something along the lines of, can't wait to see Cicnetti humbled. And then you saw these people quote tweet it and go, well, how can a man be humbled when he takes Indiana to a title? He's got every reason to feel this way. Those were most of the responses.
He lost two games in two seasons
at Indiana. So a lot of people are like, what do you mean? He should talk that talk because he went out and did it on the field. How long does that sentiment last, do you think? You think he is one of those guys who's Teflon where he can say whatever he wants because he's doing it at Indiana and people are going to be fine with it? Or will there come a point where the Cicnettiisms start to bother people? Who aren't directly affected by it because his team's not beating their team?
I think if they start missing the playoff and
I think it's
a little bit of victim of your own success of like if you were to just take Indiana to 8-4 and 9-3 every year, you'd be the greatest coach of all time at Indiana.
But you won a national title in year two, so now it's a giant disappointment.
Yes, yeah, now it's viewed as like ha, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So this is him up on the lectern talking about the back and forth between the Big Ten and the SEC, the conversation about how tough it is to play in one conference versus the other. Here is the national championship winning coach, Kirk Cicnetti.
It definitely prepares you for the playoffs. There's no doubt about it. The numbers speak for themselves. I mean, we don't run a hype machine up here in the Midwest. We believe everything's earned, not given. And when we fall short, we say we fell short. We don't cry a river, whine, and complain. All right? And that's why we're the best.
Coach Cicnetti. He's talking about your conference, Sean.
The conference my team plays in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, come on. He's talking about the conference that features a lot of, well, a lot of whining. I remember a certain coach of the team you root for talking about how tough it is and blaming losing to Ohio State for not getting into the playoff and saying, hey, we play in the toughest conference in America. We went 9-3. We should be in the playoff. I did hear that. That's Cignetti's talking about your coach along with other coaches in that conference.
I mean, he's not wrong. That there is a hype machine.
Oh, ESPN is chief among them. Yeah, if not the clear leader in hyping the big the SEC.
Yeah, like that is very, very true.
It used to be CBS along with ESPN, but now CBS is a Big Ten conference, right? Yeah. They have Big Ten 230 games now, so they will be more on Cignetti's side. And I think Laura Rutledge is catching it a little bit because she was echoing some of the opinions of some of the SEC coaches when she talked about how it's a grind. The 9-game conference schedule is really tough. Those teams are gassed at the end of the season. That's why maybe you see some of the poor performances in the playoffs. So rightfully, some people said, I thought the SEC was tested everyone. That's why when they got to the title games and they weren't playing as other SEC competition, they won because they were battle tested. Now it's a little tough to go through the conference, and then we go see a team who's had an easier schedule. We lose.
Yeah.
Which one is it?
It's tough.
The one that benefits you the most at the time.
Yeah. I mean, they added Texas, and now it's a hard conference.
Or you could say they added Texas, and now all the excuses are being made.
Not the excuses were there before.
Okay.
The excuses have always been there. Okay. When they lose bowl games, when they would lose the
Outback Bowl. I wouldn't care. It's not the game we don't care about.
When Texas beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowls, whatever.
The Georgia players really cared about the national title. They don't care about Texas. Whatever. Yes, that was a thing.
It's always been a thing. He's right. He's been right for 15 years.
It's true.
Like, except when the era started, it's because they won 7 straight national titles.
So anything they said, people swallowed because they were winning national titles. Now that you don't have national title to back up what you're saying, people are pushing back.
Now that Urban Meyer and Nick Saban aren't in your conference, you stop winning national titles.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy how that happens.
Odd, huh? You take two of the best coaches in modern history out of the conference and the national title stop. I mean, Kirby got his as the disciple of Nick Saban, certainly. But Kirby can't win them all. And now that he stopped winning them, the Big Ten has.
And you know, he got to play TCU in those.
That's true. He did get to play TCU in the title game.
And then the other year, he had to play Alabama. It was a tough, tough title. Tough title to win.
Yeah.
Had a 10th SEC game. The 8, then the title game.
It was so
I'm tired just looking at
it. It was schedule. So tough, Georgia's never recovered.
They're
exhausted.
They took a siesta after that.
Yeah.
Well, they've won the SEC, but
they can't win.
They're so tuckered out afterwards.
They took out Alabama in the title game and then lost to another SEC team.
Yeah.
That's unfair to have to play another SEC team after winning the conference.
That is.
And having a bye.
It's crazy that happened.
Yeah. Sorry.
And Alabama had to play Oklahoma. Yeah,
why would we think they would have anything left to play Indiana?
They basically had half. However many playoff teams they had half. They kept playing each other.
And the only ones they beat were each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they were exhausted.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. It's tough.
I'll give Ole Miss credit. They did beat Tulane at home.
Yeah. They BTA. Without their head coach.
It's true.
That scoundrel, Lane Kiffin.
Who will now travel to Oxford this year.
Yeah. Week 3, week 4. It's early.
I think it's pretty early, yeah. And along with all the college football talk, have you seen that ESPN has debuted the new college football song for the year? Featuring Shaboozy and Gunna?
I did listen to it.
So if I – now Shaboozy is a – pseudo country, whatever you want to call him, he has a bit of a foothold in country, at least with one song.
Yeah,
I haven't kept track of Shaboozy's chart topping history recently.
This is
but
more of like this is the like if you told me every Shaboozy song sounds like this, I'd be,
this
yeah,
one sounds like sense. Yeah, Gunna is along with them for this. So if you guys remember, was it Big and Rich who did a college football song at one point?
Got a little and they had, and your zang
then they had Cowboy Troy. Is that was that the guy?
I think so.
That was with a little zang and the zang zang. Yeah.
We're coming to your cité.
This is a little different, even though Shaboozy does do a little country. You know what? We'll give people a taste when we come back. because why not? We do have our official song of the college football season, according to ESPN. This is the one that's going to open up game day, I assume, and it'll be the song you hear going in and out of commercials at points if you're watching the game on ABC or ESPN. So we'll get to that when we come back. If you want to join us, the number is 713-780-3776. For the first time, something from Shaboozy on this show. It did take college football to get it done, but it got done. We'll do that when we come back.
Try to knock me off my feet, still standing with more money than I came with. Hot damn, took a loss, but I'm still a gambling man, betting all the chips that I got left.
You're back inside the Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea and Sean Mapes.
That is High Noon by Shaboozy featuring Gunna. That's the song you're going to hear quite a bit this college football season. You can make your opinion from that, or go find the entire song. It's an actual song, and then they co-opted it for College Game Day.
I'm a little surprised it's an actual song.
By throwing in highlights from the college football season in their release of the song, but you can find the song by itself out there. Thank you to Shaboozy and Gunna and Sean, I guess, for finding the song.
Yeah, and ESPN for for tapping. Shaboozy as the voice of college football.
Of all people.
Yeah.
This means Shaboozy has to be on game day at some point, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, sure.
Big and Rich wound up on game day at times when it wasn't just them singing the song. So I imagine, I don't know where Shaboozy's from. So if they go to a city when they're, as they say, coming to his city at least, maybe he gets to show up and pick some games.
Looks like he's from Virginia.
Yeah, Woodbridge, Virginia. I don't know how close that is to Charlottesville or Blacksburg, but if it is, maybe Shaboozy gets to go pick some games.
Yeah.
We'll see. I think Gunna from Atlanta. So, yeah, Gunna's from College Park. So, if they ever have to go, it'd be an SEC title game more so than Georgia Tech. But who knows? Maybe either one of them will get to pick games at some point. They can join the likes of Katy Perry.
Yeah.
And others.
Jelly Roll.
As musical artists who got to pick games on game day. Yeah. I can't see that name, but I do know you want to talk about training camp. So we'll get to you here before we wrap up Hour 1. I want to let you know, 11:30, Michael Carroll will join us to talk movies and television. Also, tomorrow starts, officially, Houston Restaurant Weeks begins tomorrow. It goes through September 7th. You can think of it as a citywide all-star lineup. Hundreds of restaurants with their prefix menus. And every time you eat, you help the Houston Food Bank dine out, do good, and check out the full lineup at HoustonRestaurantWeeks.com. Let's get to Keith here. He wants to talk some NFL training camp. What's up, Keith?
Hey, Dale. Love the show. Just wanted to get your thoughts. I don't know if you touched on the Deebo Samuel to back to San Francisco and their issues with injuries. It's like, you know, the Astros issues with injuries, it seems, but they've got that, you know, electrical substation. Still think Diggs is going to be a Baltimore Raven. I had my eyes set on a Deebo, but my question is, which high profile NFL player or receiver running back do you think, you know, is going to get cut kind of before the season? My best guess is I think the Titans, you know, bringing in Wandale Robinson, Carnell Tate, they've got DK and Ian Omar at receiver. I think Calvin really has the potential to be the highest paid, most high profile NFL player that gets potentially cut before the start of the season. Thanks.
So, yes, Deebo Samuel back with the 49ers. Ricky Pearsall, we talked about, I think, earlier this week for a different reason. He is dealing with a leg injury that's a little scarier to the 49ers than they initially thought. They're a bit worried about his availability going into the season. So they have made the addition of Deebo Samuels, who isn't really a wide receiver. He does. I know he plays the position, but he doesn't have a real expansive route tree. We kind of know what he is. And the 49ers need an actual wide receiver. And will Deebo Samuels be in the shape he needs to be in to contribute? He's not old. He's 30 years old. He did have a pretty productive year with the Commanders last year. Caught over 70 passes, had 5 touchdowns. So he's not completely washed. He just was too expensive for the 49ers at the time, and it's someone they're familiar with, so they'll bring him back. Is he someone who you still want to use as a running back and receiver, a gadget type player? Don't know if that juice is still there, but they're looking for active bodies, and he is one that's familiar with what they do, so they bring him back. You like Stephon Diggs in Baltimore. He fits the mold of a Baltimore receiver, and by that I mean past their prime.
Over 30.
When they signed them. He does fall right into that category, from D-Hop to there have been others like Odell, Beckham. Yeah, this is what they do. They got Zay Flowers, who they hit on as a draft pick. Bateman, not so much. And there have been others that they haven't hit on. And so they go this route. As a team always in position to go win a Super Bowl, they are attractive to the wide receivers of that age range. And they did have Harbaugh, who I guess commanded at least enough respect for those guys to want to fall in line. We'll see if it continues now that Harbaugh is gone. But they're continuing their way of doing things with Eric DaCosta as their decision maker there. As far as Calvin Ridley, I don't see it, but then I have to look at his contract situation, because by all accounts, they're set with him and Tate as their starters. And then, because I don't know that Wandale Robinson as a slot receiver is getting Calvin Ridley out the paint. I don't see that. So, and then you look at some of the other guys, they're young with little production. So it would have to be a case where DK or Iomanor come out and show out in camp and preseason where they make Calvin Ridley expendable. I don't see it happening. This is a team looking to give their young quarterback every opportunity. That's why you sign. That's why you bring in Calvin Ridley. That's why you draft Carnell Tate. That's why you bring in Wandale Robinson. I think those three are supposed to be the ones that fast forward the Cam Ward development plan.
I think it's more likely that DK and Iomanor are the ones that either get cut or are on the short end of the stick there on the wide receiver depth chart. And Xavier Restrepo.
Well, got to keep Cam happy. Keep his guy around, I guess. But so
it's the NASA's.
Restrepo's like, whatever it takes.
I don't care. Check still clear.
I don't care what you call me. If you want to call me as Brawny, I don't care. Just keep me around. So we'll see. How that wide receiver group pans out. If it reaches its ceiling, it could be considered the best, at least the best receiving core in the division. If you just go by reputation and what is possible, you throw in Carnell Tate as a rookie who was a high draft pick. It's very possible if the Titans get it right, that this is the best wide receiving core in the division, partly because I really don't think much of the division's wide receiver cores. You can throw the Jags in there, too. Travis Hunter thing, him playing wide receiver full-time works out, and then, you know, Parker Washington, Brian Thomas needs to bounce back.
Yeah.
That's probably the one with the highest ceiling. I just have my questions about Travis Hunter as a full-time wide receiver.
And BTJ.
And Brian Thomas Jr., who showed what he could be in year one. We did not get that in year two. At least the Jags didn't. So there are some options. I don't know that the Texans have a chance, really. I think it's
Titans, Jags, Colts, Texans, in whatever order. Like those two teams paired together.
Yeah. Even I just don't believe the Texans' ceiling. Unless I'm wrong about what Higgins can be in year two.
Higgins can be.
And then you mentioned it earlier. If Tank is what he was, then that changes the formula. But from my viewpoint, I said earlier that anything Tank does is a found money.
It's a little different going like maybe BTJ can bounce back because he didn't break multiple elements of his leg.
Sure, definitely. All right, thanks for the call, Keith. We appreciate it. Anyone else want to be next? You can get in. 713-780-3776. We're done with hour one. We're about 30 minutes away from Michael Carroll, but we'll certainly take your calls before that or during those segments. You know, you guys want to talk movies and television. We welcome those calls during that time as well. Hour one done. We will be back.
ESPN 97.5.